Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Man, one generation from cotton field to boardroom. It is the story of Carl Ware, his ascension in business, but it really tells historic. I'm almost tempted, Mr. Ware. Carl, how are you?
I am fine. Just it's a delight to be here, Derek, and especially on your show. I've been an admirer of yours for a number of years, and you're growing up in Atlanta and doing such great things for our community.
Man, we have studied you, you know, from afar and up close.
Yeah.
But then I broke open the book, and you put some time in this book. So let's talk a little bit about Carl Ware, those who may not know the story, because you tell the story in this book. Let's first of all talk about the approach to writing a book with this level of authenticity, with this level of candor.
Thank you.
You got to lay it out, and we want to walk it through. How do you approach writing? Because here's the thing. Great men have come through this city. I sit with Jose Williams.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm going to write a book. I got to put it all in
there. Yeah.
Left here, no book.
Yeah.
You know, great, great men and women. No book, but you did it.
And my good friend and idol, Mayor Maynard Jackson, never wrote his autobiography.
Never wrote a book. And wouldn't we love to just hear from his eyes account what he
goodness.
Saw?
I mean, what he knew and what he had provided us in terms of leadership in this city, which really brings me to the point of my writing this book. You know, Atlanta has been long known for its culture, its business, its politics, and civil rights. And I woke up one morning, Derek, realizing that I really have been closely connected with many of the events and the people and the politics that have impacted this city. And I further realized that on a world stage that I had met and worked with some of the most dynamic leaders who literally have changed the course of history in this world. And so it was a conversion of these two realizations that compelled me to the responsibility to write it all down in this book.
Let's go back to the beginning. Born in Coweta County, small country town. But the first chapter of your book talks about family, talks about your dad and your mama.
Yes.
Tell us why that foundation is so critical.
Well, you know, growing up in the Jim Crow South was very, very hard. And my father and mother had a dream that if they could raise all 11 of us, 12 of us, on this sharecropping environment, that it would be a means to an end. Mm-hmm. And that end was to one day own our own land and to become, control our own destiny. That was counterintuitive back in those days to what most black families in the rural South were doing, and they were picking up and moving up north and leaving the farm. But my mother and father stayed the course. And what they taught us, and I guess the essentially great lesson that I learned from them was the values that they instilled in all of us, and that is hard work, preparation, just stick-to-itness, humility, believing in God and trusting in God,
certainly
having courage and confidence in yourself. And these are the kind of values that they taught us and that they instilled in me that would bode well as I overcame seemingly impossible odds, seized all of the opportunities that were put in front of me and made a difference in the lives of others and hopefully made a stamp on this world.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that stamp and what a stamp it has been. But Ulysses Ware.
Oh, my dad.
He registered to vote in 1949.
1948. He became the first African American, 1949, became the first African American to register and cast his ballot under the watchful eye of Sheriff Lamar Potts of Cuyahoga County,
Newnan,
Georgia.
And he had forged a relationship with Potts, and they became friends.
And they became friends. And Potts was the kind of guy, sheriff back in those days. I happen to have known him when I was only like 4 years old, so I couldn't know him that well.
Right.
But from as legends go, he was a fair-minded sheriff who really took to my father in a big way, got to know him, and respected my father a great deal. And so when my father, Ulysses B. Ware, decided that he wanted to go cast his vote, he let the sheriff know. And the sheriff picked him up from the cotton mill where he was working, escorted him downtown Newnan to the Cuyahoga County Courthouse, and he became the first African-American since Reconstruction to cast a ballot in the 5th Congressional District of Georgia at that time, since Reconstruction. So he was a great man, and I learned so much from my dad. It was the simple things of just giving back. My mom and dad, even though we were poor, Derek, we raised our own garden, and I saw them many a times go out into the garden and pick the vegetables and distribute them to people who were less fortunate or who couldn't raise their own food. So,
all right, we got to take a break. 404-892-2703. If you have questions, this book is so good. It tells the story of Peter and Mary Walton, who was sold to the Wares.
That's right.
When we come back, we want you to tell us that story.
Thank you so much.
All right, 404-892-2703. Our special guest inside the studio is Carl Ware. The book, you got to get it, A Portrait of an American Businessman. If you don't know Carl Ware, before this interview is over, you'll know him. We want you to grab the book. As I said, from these early days of Cuyahoga County and cotton fields, have sat in some of the most powerful boardrooms in America and throughout the world as an executive at Coca-Cola. 404-892-2703. And then, you know, the legend has it, because I've studied you, as the president of Atlanta City Council, you had to make a decision.
Yes.
Were you going to continue in politics, or were you going to go to this global iconic brand that was growing and in its influence all around the world? And we want you to tell us what went into that decision.
Can't wait to make
that. All right, 404-892-2703. Clark Atlanta is your homecoming. We got one of your guys here. He has a building on the campus named for him and his wife, Mary. We're going to talk about that, too, black philanthropy. We'll be back. It's Too Much Truth with Derek Bozeman on News and Talk 1380 WALK. To Carl Ware, and has a new book, and everybody need to pick it up. Portrait of American Businessman, One Generation from Cottonfield to the Boardroom. Carl, let's just tell people how they can get the book, because we're going to walk through it. But how can you get this book?
What's the easiest way? Amazon.com. You can order it through Amazon.com. You can access my website, Carl Ware Author, and it has all of the information, including all of the appearances and book signings that we're currently doing, or you can order it directly from Mercer University Press.
Okay.
Some bookstores have it. Barnes & Noble in some locations have it. They can't keep enough of them on the shelf, I must warn you.
Yeah.
But it is available in both hardback and ebooks.
And do you know your next book signing, where it's going to be? Because we want to tell people
ahead of
time.
Yes, I want to talk about that.
Okay.
It's this coming Sunday, October 20th. I will be the featured speaker for the 8 a.m. service and the 11 a.m. service at Cascade United Methodist Church, my home church.
We love it. We love it. The young preacher over there is doing a dynamic job, too.
Reverend Murrell is, he's just a biblical scholar.
Oh,
he is a teacher.
Yeah.
And a very, very fine preacher.
All right. Now, I would tell you, come out and hear this story of Carl Ware. If you don't know him, you need to get to know him intimately. And we're going to walk you through the pages. I was happy when Darius, Ron, I want to thank Darius when it first popped up. I said, I got to get him here, because he's one of the guys who I just really want to sit down with. And so, but let's walk through your life. We started in Coweta County.
Yes.
You know, mom and daddy had a lot of faith, a lot of children.
A lot of children, and but, you know, they all, they treated us all the same.
Yeah.
We that was one of my dad and my mother's mottos, that nobody is any different. Nobody,
all
everybody's the same. And they gave us that feeling of warmth and mm-hmm. family and courage and excitement. It was hard work, but we had fun growing up together. We grew up in the church. We grew up in a lovely, warm home.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the sharecropper's shack, it was home.
It was
and
home.
And it was a good upbringing
right.
On the farm. But it didn't just start there. It started with Peter and Walton, Peter Ware and Mary Ware, back on in the days of slavery.
You tell about a cholera outbreak leads to a business opportunity.
It was
for
a
them.
Business opportunity for the slave owners who owned my ancestors first were the Walton family. This was in Heard County, Georgia, which was at that time a part of Coweta County, but then split to become Heard mm-hmm, County, mm-hmm. Georgia. And in the community called Franklin and Hogansville area was where the plantation was. And then an outbreak of pleurisy and cholera occurred back in the, I'm told, in the 1840s and 50s. And then that's where the Walton family sold all of their belongings, including the property called my ancestors, to the Wares, and that's where the Ware name starts. Mm-hmm. I was fortunate in my research as I went down through to look in the archives of Hogansville, Georgia, and Heard County, to find a woman named Miss Jane Strain Ware, who was a direct descendant of the White Wares of Heard County. And she sat me down in her living room and handed me a document. And the document read, the Wares, the White Wares of Heard County. And that's where I discovered the whole story of how my ancestors, my slave grandparents, I walked across the street from what is now Liberty Baptist Church in that area of the county, and saw where what my father had already told us were the headstones of my slave ancestors, and pulled back through the weeds and saw not headstones but rocks placed at each one of the places where my ancestors were buried. That was a stirring moment.
Yeah.
The only other time I'd had such a stirring moment was when I went to Goree Island and stood in the door of no return to have that kind of spiritual and personal, deep down, hurting yet thankful experience. It was an amazing time. But it provided so much feeling and factual reference for this book.
Yeah.
And from that experience came Peter Walton Ware. My grandfather was born Peter Ware, but then his name was changed to Peter Walton Ware because of the transaction that you spoke of. So it's an amazing history, and my father, who has been the stalwart, the rock of this Ware clan, and my mother, who came from a similar background through the Wimberley family, from which my grandfather, Joe Wimberley, who came through his experience through the Barrier Islands of South Carolina. I traced all of that work through a lot of research. We spent hundreds of hours in research and backgrounding this book.
Oh, yeah. It shows.
Four trips to South Africa.
Yeah, it shows. The book is, as I said, as I'm reading, it is well documented. This was very thoughtful.
And to get the blessings of Archbishop Desmond Tutu,
who does the foreword
to the book, was in and of itself a blessing.
Right.
I last saw him about a year ago. I actually went down and visited with him and his lovely wife, Leah Tutu. And what a marvelous man and what a great spiritual icon he is.
Yeah. All right, we're going to leave the sharecropping, plantation, the historical perspective. You eventually walk out of Coweta County and end up in this big old metropolis called Atlanta.
Well,
and with the emergence of that comes a campaign, Carl Cares.
Carl Cares.
Hold on, we got to take a break. When we come back, we want to tell what did you do? What brought you to Atlanta and how you end up running for office, for political office?
Good subject.
All right, 404-892-2703. And we'll take your calls, 404-892-2703. Our special guest inside the studio is Carl, where you can meet him, get a signed copy of his book. He's going to be at his church, the Cascade United Methodist Church, and everybody know where that is. This Sunday, he'll be speaking at the 8 o'clock and 11 a.m. service. And you can pick up a book there as well. 404-892-2703. We'll be back. It's News and Talk, 1380 WALK.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
And feels to come up to Clark College.
Yeah,
Talk about Clark College.
You know, at Clark, it was a great experience in many ways. First of all, it was the heyday of the civil rights movement.
Yeah.
And it was.
You arrived at Clark at what year?
In 1961.
Yeah.
And I stayed at Clark through 1964. And those of us fortunate enough to be at Clark, Morehouse, Morris Brown, or Spelman, and many of us were first generation college students, so missing a class or missing a moment of away from class was unthinkable. But Dr. King spoke to many rallies, student rallies, and what we learned from him, Derek, is that not only the courage to go out there and to picket and to integrate Grady Hospital, which I was, there's an incident in my book where we talked about that.
Wow.
But I also state in my book that I not only got a bachelor's degree from Clark College, but I obtained a civil rights education.
Yeah.
And that's about the courage and the fortitude and the willingness to go out and fight for your own freedom.
Yeah.
And so coming to Clark College and experiencing that and being exposed to Dr. King and other leaders like him, what then led me into politics was Dr. King's assassination. That inspired me to run for the Atlanta City Council, get elected, become the first African-American president of the Atlanta City Council, and working alongside the first African-American mayor, Mayor Maynard Jackson. And we inherited a city that at the time excluded African-American and women from city contracts, for example. But we dispelled a lot of myths during that time. And part of that was the inspiration that Dr. King instilled in us, that the use of the ballot box and public policy were the fundamental ways in which we could transform this community of Atlanta from a city of exclusion to a city of inclusion. So when we launched the $2 billion expansion of the Atlanta airport, we proved to the Atlanta white business community and to Wall Street and to others that you need not sacrifice one iota of the city's stellar financial performance, nor jeopardize the construction process in that expansion of just because you had minority participation. They had it all wrong for the wrong reasons. Mm-hmm. We got it all right for the right reasons. And consequently, at least 25% of all of the contracts, goods and services at Atlanta Airport and in the city, at least 25% was managed and owned by companies that were managed and owned by black folks.
It was a game changer.
It was a game changer.
Really, economically across the country.
Across the country, yeah. And it was a model for other countries.
Other airports.
And I can tell you this, that when apartheid was abolished in South Africa, mm-hmm. they adopted a policy similar that at least 25% of all of that economy of South Africa would accrue to the benefit of black South Africans. From the board level straight the way through the ownership, the distribution, and the production of goods and services within industries in that country. So it had global impact, not just national impact.
And that global impact had Coca-Cola calling you, or were you already? Tell us how you end up, because you, at some point, you are president of the city council.
Yeah.
Second most powerful man in the political structure that emerged out of this new dynamic city. Maynard is this iconic figure, but what people didn't realize, his program couldn't go forth unless the city council approved it. Then Coca-Cola come calling, tell us the Coca-Cola story.
When I came back from graduate school, University of Pittsburgh, back in the late 60s, I came back because I wanted to get into politics, and I did. I entered politics, and I was approached by Coca-Cola Company then to come to work for the company, and I turned it down, and I said, no, my mission in life is to do what Dr. King taught us to do, and so I turned it down, but in 1979, Coke came knocking again. At that time, I had already was working on a part-time level with the company, but I was also president of the Atlanta City Council. And here's the thought process that helped me to determine my course of action relative to Coca-Cola. I said that there were numerous African-Americans who could be mayor of the city of Atlanta. But there was one African-American who could take on the Coca-Cola brand and become a senior executive in the Coca-Cola company in the world, and that was Carl Ware. I made that decision consciously. And I was eventually promoted to deputy group president of Coca-Cola Northeast Africa and Europe. I moved to London to run the Africa aspect of that company. And eventually, the company created a new division, a new group called Coca-Cola Africa. And I was then made president of Coca-Cola Africa. So taking charge of the whole continent was a dream come true. Yeah.
But you took charge at a time when the Out of South Africa movement, I'm not going to play Sun City. Entertainers, everybody was saying, we need the apartheid regime. It's very oppressive. And you were sent in
one of the reasons
to
why,
deal with it.
Yeah, one of the reasons why I was so excited about working in Africa was the challenges of changing the oppressive apartheid regime of South Africa. And using the powerful brand of the Coca-Cola Company, yeah. To lead the way for other American corporations to disinvest. So with the encouragement of Archbishop Desmond Tutu, who inspired me to become the architect of the Coca-Cola Company's disinvestment strategy in 1986. This was one of the most turbulent and violent and mm-hmm. dangerous times
yeah.
In South Africa. 10 years later, Derek, I became the architect of the Coca-Cola Company's reinvestment in South Africa at the time apartheid was abolished and when Nelson Mandela became
the
first
walked out.
president of South Africa after he was released from prison. He told me that I was the first American businessman that he wanted to sit down with and have a chat with upon his release. I'll never forget the day that that occurred. That was the same day that Namibia received its independence from South Africa. I attended the independence ceremony in Namibia, flew directly to Johannesburg, and sat down with Madiba, Nelson Mandela, our leader, our father. What a regal presence, but with the common touch of a man on that day that I met him.
You have to sit down with P.W. Botha, the president of apartheid South Africa. Come back, tell us what that conversation was like, and then tell us about the Nigerian nosebleed.
Yes, I will. You know,
Nigerian nosebleed. That was a funny story.
There's some great stories in this book.
Look, y'all got to get this book. I'm telling you, I've only had a few hours, but I've been able to glean through it and could read the whole, you know, could read the whole thing sitting here. Carl is all over Africa. Now, Africa is a continent, not a country. It is huge.
Yes.
And you go to Nigeria and didn't know how to anticipate the weather. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. Our special guest is Carl Ware. Again, the book is A Portrait of American Businessman. Carl Ware, y'all call in. I'll let y'all go because Carl got to leave in a little bit. But we're going to make sure you get your question in. So, Jeff, you've been holding a long time. And he have his niece Pamela here. Now, everybody who comes to WLK on my show works. So we're going to talk to Pamela, too. You ain't just going to come in here and sit up. You're going to have to talk, too. So we'll be back in a moment. Don't go to play. Stick and stay with us. It is Too Much Truth with Derek Bozeman on News and Talk 1380 WALK. South Africa in June 2020. Till I even pay his freight, you know? Carl, you're all over Africa. You established a global brand. You meet with P.W. Botha, who, you know, people see as the kind of the architect, the granddad of apartheid.
Actually, it was F.W.
de Klerk. F.W. de Klerk.
F.W. de Klerk. In 1989, I believe it was, he invited me to meet with him in his office in Cape Town. You know, the government of South Africa meets both in Pretoria, which is the capital, and in Cape Town for its legislative session. And so he invited me down to have a visit with him to talk about his intentions. Ironically, on that day, he was headed to meet for the first time with the president of Nigeria, for the very first time that a white South African president.
Wow.
He was signaling that it was time for change. He related a story to me that most times when he went back to his hometown, the clerk said that he would be greeted by his friends and his neighbors and his all of his great admirers. But when he announced the unbanning of the ANC, he was palmeted with rotten eggs. He told me that story, and he told me a story that says, let America know, particularly the business community and the people in the Congress, that change is going to come, and it's going to come rapidly. Would you take that message back? And I did.
You ultimately talk about this book, in this book, about your experience at this global, iconic, branded corporation. You work with some of the Robert Goswetta. You work with Don Keough, some of the modern day, their names will be hung up there next to some of the foul guys. But you talk about being a black man in this environment.
Yeah.
And still having to, and this was refreshing.
Yeah.
Still training people who end up being your boss.
Yeah, well, you know, the experience of working in Coca-Cola had many, many dimensions. And I can tell you that when my mentors left the company, it got very, very difficult. Roberto Siguenza was not only a friend and a champion of mine, he was a champion of diversity for the company in general. But when Roberto passed away and eventually Don Keough left, part of that kind of impetus went with them.
Faded.
And so they're competing always with people at the top It was difficult. And even though there are times when I pointed out to my bosses at the time that, listen, diversity is a competitive advantage.
Yeah.
It is not just something that is nice to do. But when you have a strong and good diversity culture within the company, you are competitive with the employing the right people. They'll come and they'll stay and they'll grow in the company. Your bottom line, it will accrue to your bottom line and to your share owners. They will be proud of you. Much of that, some of that was heard as I went about creating that cultural diversity. Some of it was ignored. And it was not the question, as the Wall Street Journal says, when I retired, when I resigned from Coca-Cola, that I was angry. It wasn't about anger. It was about being disrespected. And it was about being ignored. And so I said to myself, you know, there's life after Coke. So when I retired from Coca-Cola the first time, I went about the business of casting my future. I had already been invited to serve on the board of directors of Chevron. I accepted that invitation at that time, and the board of directors of Cummins. I was already serving on the board of directors of the PGA Tour. I had been invited to serve on other boards of directors of multinational corporations. So I said, well, you know, now that I've had the day-to-day management experiences, I don't have to put up with this. I can go and do other things in other companies. And so I did. But before I made that move, the company invited me back to an even higher position than when I occupied before.
What do you think that, why? Why did they do that?
I think that once the CEO of the company was let go, partially because of the way he dealt with diversity and how he dealt with me.
And Coke went through some stormy times.
And some stormy times.
Lawsuits, diversity lawsuits. Alexis Herman, a bunch of other
folks. We settled the lawsuit. I, along with the help of Alexis Herman, who came in as a consultant and eventually I recommended her for the board of directors of the Coca-Cola company, and she did marvelous things at that level to change the company. So the company did change, and so I did go back for 3 years under a very specific contract that says that I'm here to do three things: settle the lawsuit for the company, help to restore the Coca-Cola company's stellar reputation around the world as a good corporate citizen, and to help settle the Belgium contamination crisis, product contamination crisis in Belgium.
Wow.
I did all of those things as best I could, and in 3 years, I left. They then retained me as a consultant to the chairman and CEO of the company, and one day, I walked into the chairman's office and said, you know, Neville Isdell at that time had become the CEO of the Coca-Cola company. I said, Neville, look, you guys are really not using me, so I'm going to hand you this contract back. It was a very lucrative contract. He said, you got to be kidding. I've never seen somebody turn in a contract. I said, but, you know, you really are not. The company needs this money to do other things. Why don't you do something that I think would be a great statement, and that is to support with this contract something that I've already done as a philanthropist, support the effort to build the Carl and Mary Ware Academic Center at Clark Atlanta University. And that's what they did. I turned in the contract and then went out on my own to do other things. There are many stories like that in the book and much, much more.
I got to get the book. You got to get the book. From Coweta County, sharecropper, you know, to tracing his roots. And Carl has been very, because I know him and have studied him, he's been very modest because he kept the door open for a lot of people.
To
Ingrid Sanders Jones. Again, we became... Ingrid went from being your secretary at, I think, City Hall.
Well, Ingrid was my executive assistant at City Hall
and
when
one
I
of
was
the
president
most
of City Council.
Wonderful people you ever want to meet.
Yes.
But was given an opportunity because she's followed you to Coca-Cola.
I brought her over to Coca-Cola Company to help me work on and settle the Operation Push boycott against Coca-Cola. So
a lot of stuff talking
about. A lot
about.
Of stuff in that book.
And
they, a lot
and,
of great
and
stories.
You were the chairman of the foundation. You helped them set up the foundation.
I founded the Coca-Cola Foundation.
Thank God for the Coca-Cola Foundation.
Yes.
Everybody got a little bit of Coca-Cola about it. You can thank Carl Ware for it. You got to get this book. Look, coming back, Carl only have about 10, 15 minutes. Jeff, Jasper, we're going straight to your question. Now, this is my guest now. Y'all know, you know Bozeman rule now. Don't ask my guest no dumb questions. Don't call up in here and make me have to hang up on you, Carl. Don't pay no attention, Pam. When we come back, Pam, we're going to talk about, this is your uncle. This is your, pull that microphone over there to you. Don't worry about that. We'll pick that up. Hey. She was just wandering around. We like, I told CJ, call security. Who this woman just walking around the whole studio? When we come back, we want to talk about this. You know, this is Uncle Carl. And but we know him as this. Yeah, we know him as the big business executive. And to be honest with you, he has not granted. He don't grant many. He don't talk. He doesn't sit down with journalists and talked a lot about his life and his career. So talk about this man in the context of family when we come back for a few minutes. Can you do that for us? All right, 448-922-2703. And we're going straight to, Jeff, you've been on the phone for a whole hour, so we're going straight to you, Jeff and Jasper. Get your good questions in, okay? Don't embarrass me. I'm just letting you know. We'll be back on News and Talk 1380 WLK.
All right. You're going to learn today.
Call us at 404-892-2703 on News and Talk 1380 WAOK.
I'm right where I've always longed to be.
You got a story.
In your pulpit, man. And I'll be preaching.
Iconic pulpit.
And I'll be talking about the book, but I'll be talking on a few other important subjects to our community as well.
I'm going to try to make one of those. I got to see which one I can make. Let's go to our phone. Let's go to Jeff in Mableton. You're on with Carl Ware. Jeff, how are you?
Fine, and you, sir?
Good. Your question real quick, because he only has a few more minutes.
Yes, Mr. Ware, there were times I'm sure it was real hard for you. Where did you find the strength to get out of your comfort zone?
Well, the strength...
Great question.
You know, being in a comfort zone is a very important place to be. And it is not a negative, and it's not necessarily a positive. The strength always, from me, comes from God. It always comes from the values that were taught me by my mother and father of hard work, preparation, humility. These are lessons that I didn't learn at Clark College or University of Pittsburgh or Harvard or Georgia Tech or Georgia State. I went to all of those schools. But the key lessons is about manhood. It is about standing up for what is right. It is by doing things and reaching back. I call it sending the elevator back down.
Yeah, you've done that.
To bring people up who need to be brought up. It is not about when you're in a job, about what that next promotion is. It's about doing and dedicating yourself to doing the best job in the position that you're in. Those are the kinds of values that always helped me and instilled in me to achieve all of the things that I have achieved in my life.
There you go. Jasper, real quick question.
Yes, sir. Thank you for yourself, Derek, and for your guest. It's two things I would like to ask Dr. Ware. And the first being, when he was in charge of Coca-Cola in Africa, how many of those distributorships, once apartheid was broken down, was he able to see that people of color got a hold of? And are they still in charge of those distributorships in the continent? And the second thing is, what happened when he was at Clark Atlanta that they couldn't retain the Library of Science program?
Okay. Yeah.
Well, the first question I can answer with surety that One of the missions that I went on in Africa was to do what I call Africanizing the Africa business. Mm. When I took over Coca-Cola Africa, there was not one single solitary African in charge of any profit and loss function or business on the continent. We changed that. We changed that by bringing in all of my direct reports who were European and white Americans. And I said to them, I want each one of you to bring back a plan to me that says in 5 years there will be Africans in line to take over your job. And they did that.
Wow.
And I further went on to work with the ANC in South Africa and Archbishop Desmond Tutu and others to create the first African-owned Coca-Cola bottling franchise in South Africa. That was called the Kilimanjaro Bottling Company. And that was during the apartheid regime, by the way. And then after it was apartheid was abolished, we created the Kanini Brothers Holding Company, which became the one of the largest and most powerful Coca-Cola bottlers in South Africa and eventually on the continent of Africa. So Africanizing the Coca-Cola business. As for the library science program, the little I do know about the library science program at Clark Atlanta is that you have to keep up with the technology and the times of managing, operating, and making sure that you get the right kind of technology driving programs in the library science field. It's not the Dewey Decimal System anymore. Uh-huh. It is a very, very complex, sophisticated, technologically driven function.
Pam, turn him down. Yeah, to us, he's Caldwell, the iconic Coca-Cola executive council president. But he is your, as you said, your dad is baby brother. Talk about who this man is to you and what family means to him. Bring that down.
I would say that family is everything to us. You know, that was just something that I called him Big Daddy. He was our you know, my father is retired in the military, so we were away, you know, just dead. But, you know, my memories of, you know, being down in the summer, you know, and that was just joy, you know. You know, I don't really think about it now, but, you know, when all of us came in our couples and, you know, all of the kids that were there now, all of our kids are grown now, you know, but this is really, you're the second generation, third generation that are growing now. And so one of the things I think is critical is for us, all of these stories, you know, and that's the gift. You know, it's a gift to the larger community to know about the Coca-Cola, about history, about the contributions that Coca-Cola has made to the community, to the community, to the mission of the community, you know, contributions.
Wow. Senator Crawford Ware.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is these our, is this our people?
Yeah, yeah.
Is what you want to know. He is. Wow.
What? That was they were the direct descendants of the slave owners of our slave ancestors.
Right.
What Pam did not tell you is one of the proudest moments of my life was learning that she was going to study for her master's degree in public administration, which is I received a master's degree in public administration as well. And she has done so many marvelous things in her brief career. And I am just so proud of her, and as I am with all of my, I tell you, coming to the Ware family reunion, which happens about every 2 or 3 years, is a great, it's another book to be written.
There you go.
About that. And all 350 of us gather down at the farm, and we have a marvelous time for 3 or 4 days down at the same farm that we share crop. That's where I live now.
Won't he do it?
Yes.
Mr. Ware, thank you.
Thank you so very much, Derek. And this has been a marvelous opportunity for us to talk about this story.
Check him out. He'll be at Cascade United Methodist Church this Sunday for the 8 a.m. and 11 a.m. You can pick the book is going to be there.
The book will be there and be available to anyone who wishes to purchase it.
And I'm sure they'll be in line. Get your book and meet this incredible gentleman.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Look here, we got to take a break. I'm 3 minutes over. I got to go. I got people on the phone. We have to have a call back. A lot of history. But get this book. And when I tell you, it's probably one of the most well-written books that tells you about this family. And about this man. We'll be back as News and Talk 1380 WALK.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.